outstanding in my view and which deal with Exxon's credibility in this whole matter. You indicated earlier that during the first day following the accident that you did not instruct Alyeska to avoid booming the ship. In an interview, as reported in this morning's paper, 2 weeks after the spill, and I think it's documented elsewhere, interview 2 weeks after the spill, Alyeska Terminal Superintendent Chuck O'Donnell said it was Exxon that ordered Alyeska to keep its boom away from the ship on several different occasions throughout the first day of the spill. I just want very clearly to pin it down. Is that accurate or is that inaccurate?
Congressman, we, and when I say we, I mean myself and the
When you say we, you mean Exxon.
I can only speak for the people that were with me traveling on that first day. We in no time said anything about a boom around the ship. We in no time gave any instruction to Alyeska. Now, I don't know what was going on the vessel itself during that first day. Commander Falkenstein was there for the entire time. Our crew was there, and I don't know if anything came out of the vessel itself. But if your question is, did Exxon management from Houston or from the aircraft issue any instructions? To my knowledge, absolutely not.
Did Exxon management from any place, Houston or any place else, issue such orders?
I can speak with some confidence other than with respect to the ship, not having been there. The answer with respect to everywhere else would be absolutely not.
Let me ask you another question. You stated earlier, Mr. Stevens, that Exxon never conducted any contingency drill experiences in Prince William Sound. Yet, you must have hauled millions of barrels of oil. How many tankers owned by Exxon have transmitted the sound, and how many barrels of oil would they have held all these years?
Well, the cumulative production off of the slope must be something in the 6 billion barrel range. We're about a 20% owner. There have been over 8,700 tanker round trips, tanker transits, round trip transits. We're about 20% of the volume, so I think that would be the numbers. Frank, you want to comment on the contingency drills?
The last drill we had was the one in October of 88, and we normally hold our drills at the Texas A&M Center because there we can actually get out and work with the equipment, but we can't do that elsewhere.
Prince William Sound, you never did any, is it?
That's correct. Yes, to my knowledge, we have not.
The issue deals with whether Exxon really does care about its responsibilities, whether there is a genuine concern. We see Exxon now spending many millions of dollars every day up here. And the question arises legitimately in the minds of not only this subcommittee, but I think of the people of Alaska and the people of America, what your genuine interests are here. When you say, as you said, that the Coast Guard altered the course or approved the course change the night of the accident, that the Coast Guard licensed the master of the ship, when you say that Alyeska approved the contingency plan and you did not, knowing that you'd have to live with it and execute it, even if there ever was an accident of one of your ships, when you say that the Alaska state approved the contingency plan, you're saying that it's somebody else's fault. And that's been a germ through the entirety of your testimony, not just today, but since the beginning. So you're here in force with all of your public relations people and making very impressive presentations. But I remember 16 years ago, when as a member of this committee, I sat and heard the president of Exxon and officials of Alyeska and other of the then partnership, Alyeska, promise us there wouldn't be spills, that you could handle it responsibly, that there wouldn't be damage to this pristine country, which is Alaska. But if there ever were a spill, that you would handle it responsibly, you would have the best technology poised to handle a spill, and there could not be any really significant degradation. Now, I remember that firsthand. I was there and heard it. And then I hear you say, Mr. Stevens, that you never approved this contingency plan, which was the only possible prescription for order out of the massive disorder which would naturally follow any kind of an accident like that which occurred at Bly Reef. You say you never looked at the contingency plan. You didn't study it. I say that says that Exxon apparently didn't give a damn for the people of Alaska or for the otters. Why didn't you take the responsibility of making certain that if an accident happened, there would be a contingency plan you could live with? We've dealt with the incompetence of the initial response to the spill. But policy-wise, doesn't that indicate a lack of interest, really, when you didn't care enough to figure out what would happen if there was a spill?
Congressman, possibly my reply to you on our involvement in the approval of the plan was confusing. Let me restate what I meant to say. The Exxon entity, which owns the interest in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline and in Alyeska, share held interest in Alyeska, is Exxon Pipeline. That is my responsibility. Exxon Pipeline is one of the affiliates that reports to me, to the U.S. company. I stated that Exxon Pipeline participated in the owner committee review of the oil spill contingency plan and that we share in the responsibility for it. I couldn't make it any clearer. And with respect to responsibility, let me say that we came on the scene here in the very early hours. We accepted responsibility for what's happened. We have, not only by our words, moved to fulfill that responsibility, but by our deeds. We have moved since day one to the best of our abilities, heaven and earth, to bring the resources to bear, not only of the Exxon Corporation, but of experts in equipment, expertise from all around the world. And we're going to continue to do that until we finish the job. This is the sort of responsibility that we try to exhibit every day as we go about our business.
But
we place a high responsibility on protection of the environment.
But you see, Mr. Stevens, that really isn't the issue. I know what you're doing now, and it's impressive, and you're spending great, great resources. The question is why there wasn't more care, more concern in the beginning for what would happen if there was an accident. I mean, we've seen a total comedy of errors since this accident has happened. And yet we were promised, the people here were promised, that you would be very careful. And you have been careless. And the question is why you're not now willing to say something about fault and responsibility. It would be very meaningful if the public were to hear you say, gee, we were a little sloppy. We accept the fault. Wish we'd done it differently. We're doing everything we can to repair it. Instead, we hear from Exxon, we hear from Alyeska that it's Exxon's fault. From Exxon, we hear that it's Alyeska, it's the Coast Guard, it's the ADEC, it's someone else's fault.
It's our ship, it's our all. We're responsible. With respect to the plan.
But it's not your fault.
I can't say the statement that I just made without saying that the oil on the water is our fault. It's our ship. It was our people on that ship. That doesn't necessarily say that there was carelessness.
Well, don't you want to apologize a little bit to the people of Alaska for what you've done to their beaches?
We have apologized first to the people of Prince William Sound, to the people of Alaska, and to the people of this country. Now what we've got to do is deal with the problem. With respect to the contingency plan, clearly there's some lessons to be drawn from this. The only reply I can give you in response to your question for the benefit of this committee, because I think you're trying to look back and learn, draw some lessons from this incident, is that a 200,000 barrel scenario, and I quote from the plan, in Prince William Sound, a 200,000 barrel spill in Prince William Sound was viewed as, and I quote, highly unlikely, end quote. That's not meant in any way to excuse anything. That's the only reconciling comment I can make. However inconceivable that may seem to you, that was what was in the plan that was submitted and approved.
Well, that same report says, in fact, that such an accident could be expected to happen only once every 241 years, and 2.5 years later, it happened. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Fazio.
I'd like to take a minute for a little parochial line of questioning here about the repair of the ship. Is it the intention of the company to take the ship to Portland, Oregon?
We haven't made a decision right now. We're in the process of continuing to clean the ship, in the process of continuing our surveys of the damaged area. And we have in fact asked a number of shipyards to quote on the repair, one of which is the ship repair facilities in Portland. We've asked other ship repair companies in the U.S., and we've also asked a couple foreign companies. And we have not made a selection as yet. One of the items that we have to study very, very carefully is the ability of the vessel to move either under its power or to be towed. And we have to worry both about the structural integrity and the stability. Those studies are ongoing. And at this point, we have not made that determination, Congressman. I understand your interest in that subject. Clearly, we have no intention of moving the ship until we have cleaned absolutely all of the oil out of it. Okay.
Wait, a paper problem.
You're listening to a live congressional hearing in Valdez, Alaska. The court reporter is once again replenishing her machine. We've been hearing from Frank Iorossi, the president of Exxon Shipping. He's responding to Peter DeFazio of Oregon.
We are in the process of cleaning those tanks and getting them certified as clean. As of the middle of this week, we had 5 tanks so certified as being clean of any oil. It's a slow process because you have to allow the decanting to go so that oily water mixture, the oil rises to the top and we can skim it off. But we're being absolutely careful about that.
I would underscore one comment that Admiral Robbins made earlier this morning, and that is the movement of the vessel will certainly be done under the careful control of the Coast Guard.
On the statement that you've brought the resources of Exxon to bear, we had a demonstration of that. I saw some technology in the slideshow the other night that I'd never seen before, but I guess that was probably your Learjet I saw out at the airport. Those are impressive resources. The question is, we were on the beach, and I talked to a lot of the workers. They don't have respirators. They don't have socks. Enough wool socks. They were told, you know, that these things, you know, everything be provided. Don't bring anything with you. I saw a list of instructions of, you know, what they were to bring, what they weren't to bring. That their gear doesn't get cleaned on a daily basis and dried. That essentially they're continually working in oil. What we saw on the beach was very discouraging. There were some people there who were very well-intentioned. There were some people who were filling up space and making a lot of money per hour. But they were all equipped with the same thing, which was large handy wipes, sorbent, I guess, of some sort it's called. And they're wiping down boulders, rocks, that's the state of the art. I mean, that is, that's it. I mean, because I, you know, if this was China and we could mobilize a billion people and give each of them, you know, at one of those big things of sorbent, we still wouldn't get 365 miles done by fall. I mean, it's just, I mean, we didn't witness the high-pressure washing, but we did go to a beach which had been washed twice. When you dug down in the gravel, we were told that, and I mean, we saw, Bruce and I did this, that the water line, you dig down the gravel and up comes the brown crude, and we were told that goes down 3.5 feet. There's no method known to anyone who we talked to of how to get that out of the beach except through natural processes, and I have no idea how long that might take. I mean, this is the state of the art. I mean, what we witnessed, that cleanup activity, I mean, you've got great resources here. You've taken over a motel or whatever, or you did originally, and now you've got a building, and you've got PR people, and you've got a good slideshow, and, you know, I mean, all these things are going on. I noticed all the supervisors for this company, which has some sort of affiliation with Exxon, standing in a big clump while the workers work, sort of like any kind of public works thing that industry would point their finger at and say, look at all the people leaning on shovels. This is it. I mean, that's what we're going to see for the summer. I mean, there's nothing else. I mean, it's pretty, I tried to wipe one rock. I think it was Congressman Durbin and myself. And
I wouldn't hire him.
Yeah, and we didn't make a lot of progress.
Those are good questions, if you will, Congressman. Let me begin at the top and start with socks. The logistics are that we've ordered 100,000 pairs of wool socks to have on location. We have had a very rapid buildup of people, and I'm not going to tell you we've done it perfectly. We're doing it the best we know how. We're trying to get in front of each one of those problems. We have had to add capability for washing and of clothes and caring for people on board the Juno, and specifically that's where those people that you saw were working out of at that time. And I don't want to belittle that. You know, that is a problem. We're working very hard on it, and I feel confident that we're gaining on that problem. Let me just comment in general. We have been able to bring people online faster than we have been able to bring equipment online. And you've seen the equipment, which are the sprayers and the washers and the heaters, and we're still bringing that equipment online. We elected to err on the side of going ahead and bringing in the people, even though sometimes the equipment for mechanical washing was not yet available. Then we made the decision, all right, how do we use these people? We said, rather than have them doing nothing, let's wipe rocks. Now, we've recognized that wiping rocks is an extremely low productivity effort and will not get the job done. But it was better than have them doing nothing. So we did have some people wiping rocks until such time as we can get all of the equipment on site that will put everybody into the mechanical mode, which will either be cold water or hot water washing, depending on what the operation is. We do not depend on, nor have we ever depended on, nor do we ever plan to depend on, the wiping of rocks as a highly productive or successful process for cleaning the beaches. But we did think it was prudent to err on the side of bringing the people resources on as quickly as we could. Now, we recognize that's given a bad impression from time to time. Let me comment just for a moment on Smith Island, and your observations on Smith Island are very valid. And I'm assuming that's where you landed from the Juno.
Both Smith and Little Smith.
Okay. That island, in our opinion, and the opinion of the people that are doing the assessment surveys, which includes the agencies involved, is the worst hit of all the islands. It has the broadest beach. It's the worst hit. We're not through cleaning that island, and we recognize it's a very difficult job. We did hit it early for a cleaning process because we wanted to take the loose oil that was laying on top off of the rocks so that we'd minimize potential for re-oiling the areas where the seals will be pupping. And to that extent, in achieving that, we've been successful. We have not finished cleaning that beach, but I think we've been successful in improving the level of protection in the areas where the seals will be pupping. All of that is part of that plan in order to reach our environmental objectives in the program. But it is a difficult area. And I want to assure you, we do not plan to depend on anyone wiping rocks as the means of completing this project.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. When I was out here some 3 weeks ago, Mr. Stevens, I left Valdez with a very strong notion that this system had had a major failure. And by the system, I mean essentially from the Arctic Circle, the delivery system that runs from the Arctic Circle to, I guess, Long Beach or in some cases around through the Panama Canal to the East Coast. And I think one of the things we've learned in this hearing is just like we learned from the space shuttle, that it wasn't just the O-rings that were in trouble. There were whole components of that system that were stressed out, that were stretched beyond their capabilities, had to be redesigned, re-engineered, refabricated in order to ensure the safety of that system. I think that's what we're learning here. Whether it's the maze over here of walking people through and allowed what has been alleged to be an impaired master to get through that system, whether it's a question of the assets being the state of the state-of-art technology that the people have been assured, the response times, whether they're realistic or not, you have to appreciate what it means to sit on this side of the table and find out that the Alyeska disavowed the notion that they were going to pick up 100,000 barrels in 48 hours, and we see them committing themselves to a plan with the governor to pick up 100,000 barrels in 10 hours. We've been stung in this process as policymakers. Our constituents are asking us for those questions. At the same time, the industry is asking us to expand this system. Whether it's the North Slope or Alaska, whether it's the Beaufort Sea, get these terms down, it relies on this same system. If we were to do the North Slope, some people say that would double the life of the pipeline. Why would we double the life of the pipeline into the year 2010, 2020, if we still have this system of 1988 in place? And we like to think that we represent the public. I think in this case, you have involuntarily been drafted to represent the industry in this endeavor. I appreciate that you've said that the industry is willing to undertake this effort. But this mismatch cannot continue between our ability to discover, our ability to refine and make new products. And it's the old business, the chain is as strong as its weakest link. And we have some marvelous technology across your industry. Fabulous. But now we see that what we're saddled with is a weak link that threatens to bring down future exploration and development. I think that's just very clear. And you're in a tough position. This is, as we announced in the beginning, this is a series of hearings that we will be doing on this spill, on your Alyeska system. We have jurisdiction over that, over the right-of-way, and obviously have very substantial jurisdiction over the production for that facility. And I expect that we will be calling upon you again, both with respect to this particular incident, but also engaging in very, very careful scrutiny about how we redesign, re-engineer this system. I am not comfortable at all with the, I think it was necessary, but the 30-day emergency response, it simply isn't adding another skimmer. There's something else more fundamentally wrong here. And I think that's going to be the challenge. We expect to be involved in that process, and look forward to working with you. This is a tough adversarial process at this point because people feel that they were stung. Our constituents have communicated it to us. You've received your 10 or 12 or 15,000 chopped up credit cards. No impact on your earnings, but you better listen to what they're saying. Because that's what they're saying to us. And I hope that that this can be worked out. But as I said earlier, I do not know why I would expand this system into the 1990s. given all that you've said about our future energy needs, if I'm saddled with this kind of response to a horrible environmental insult such as this. And I guess that's about it. There's no further comments from my colleagues.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, let me say that we are listening. We're listening to the dialogue in this committee today. We're listening to the American people. We're getting a lot of letters, as you can imagine. I've commented that there are some lessons to be learned from this accident. We're taking those on board. We'll participate in industry forums as well as within our own company. It's important, I feel, to recognize that around the turn of the century, oil production from existing sources is going to be down by about 30% from today's levels in this country. And you commented earlier that you're not seeking, you realize that a risk-free environment is not possible. What we're about then, we in Exxon, you in this committee, is trying to look at the balance of risk and benefit. And certainly we should keep in mind the benefit that domestic supply brings to this country. We look forward to participating with you in this committee and other forums in addressing that balance.
I think, let me just say, I appreciate, you know, the notion is somehow we're going to be irresponsible policymakers if we don't appreciate the flow of oil in this country. Around the turn of the century or even before, we're going to start dismantling nuclear power plants. And this country has made, as of to date, a conscious decision that they're not going to build any more. And whether that's wise or not wise, the country is capable of that kind of decision. And that's all that I'm saying. And that decision involved some of the biggest corporations in this country, some of the heaviest lobbying politically in this country, all the things that are present in this conflict. And they lost that conflict to the American public. Now, we all have our opinions about what that means down the road. But I suggest that the potential is present here for that same kind of debate. It may not be a national decision. They may just decide that we're going to put Alaska offshore, off limits, or the ANWR off limits, or the California coast. And you know the ramifications of that in your industry. Because it's very easy. One of the concerns we have shared, Mr. Vento, myself, and others on the committee, it's very easy to make decisions about Alaska when you're from the lower 48. And I'm just suggesting that I think that the nature of this debate is as great as the debate you had when the public finally said, you can't deal with the waste. You have 1950 technology and the waste of nuclear power. We're not going to take the newest reactor you can promise us.
Let me just say that we're not just saying responsibility. What Mr. Harrison and his team and over 5,000 Alaskans are doing now is addressing responsibility through a commitment to get a job done. That's what we're committed to do over the course of this summer, and that will be, of course, the first test of the responsibility of Exxon. We'll get the job done, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think when we hear this discussion about balance, we think that this has changed the nature of the equation. All of a sudden, the costs that are attributed to this development, whether it be on the North Shore or the transportation, if you can't miss fixed targets in terms of navigation, one wonders how you're going to continue to have some luck in dodging the icebergs that are out there. But beyond that, I think the equation has changed. The balance has shifted here. No one thought when they developed this pipeline that we were going to put at risk and to do substantial damage to the areas that have been damaged, and damaged in such a way that you will not be able to change them. We've got 20 or 30 years of degradation here of sensitive environmental areas. And you ought to understand that, and you ought to be interested in dealing with the funding of the research and the other efforts. You know, on Kenai Fjords, they have eight Park Service people. And Katmai, you know, nearly 4 million acres, 8 or 10 people working there. You know, it's not very much considering the type of problems they face. So there's a long way to go between now and a conclusion to this issue. And so far, I haven't had the answers forthcoming. It isn't just one event. It wasn't just Bly Reef. It's a whole series of things that have followed since then. that I think have demonstrated the inability to deal with this type of problems. You know, relying on nature, you know, Exxon's a lot of things. But, you know, I'll draw the line when I say whose side nature is on or whose side you're not God. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Stand adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
And that was a statement by Bruce Vinto, Democrat from Minnesota, followed by the adjournment of this congressional subcommittee hearing by George Miller, who is the chairman of the House Interior Subcommittee on Water Power and Offshore Energy Resources. This morning we heard from two Coast Guard officers, Captain or Commander Steve McCall, Port Captain for the Port of Valdez, and also...
We haven't made a decision right now. We're in the process of continuing to clean the ship, in the process of continuing our surveys of damaged area, and we have in fact asked a number of shipyards to quote on the repair, one of which is the port ship repair facilities in Portland. We've asked other ship repair companies in the U.S., and we've also asked a couple foreign companies. And we have not made a selection as yet.
One of the items that we have to study very, very carefully is the ability of the vessel to move either under its power or to be towed. And we have to worry both about the structural integrity and the stability. Those studies are ongoing, and at this point we have not made that determination, Congressman. I understand your interest in that subject. Clearly we have no intention of moving the ship until we have cleaned absolutely all of the oil out of it. Until, okay.
Paper problem.
You're listening to a live congressional hearing in Valdez, Alaska. The court reporter is once again replenishing her machine. We've been hearing from Frank Iorossi, the president of Exxon Shipping. He's responding to Peter DeFazio of Oregon.
We are in the process of cleaning those tanks and getting them certified as clean. As of the middle of this week, we had five tanks so certified as being clean of any oil. It's a slow process because you have to allow the decanting to go so that oily water mixture, the oil rises to the top and we can skim it off. But we're being absolutely careful about that.
I would underscore one comment that Admiral Robbins made earlier this morning, and that is the movement of the vessel will certainly be done under the careful control of the Coast Guard.
On the statement that you've brought the resources of Exxon to bear, we had a demonstration of that. I saw some technology in the slideshow the other night that I'd never seen before, but I guess that was probably your Learjet I saw out at the airport. Those are impressive resources. The question is, we were on the beach, and I talked to a lot of the workers. They don't have respirators. They don't have socks. Wool socks. They were told, you know, that these things, you know, everything be provided. Don't bring anything with you. I saw a list of instructions of, you know, what they were to bring, what they weren't to bring. That their gear doesn't get cleaned on a daily basis and dried. That essentially they're continually working in oil. What we saw on the beach was very discouraging. There were some people there who were very well-intentioned. There were some people who were filling up space and making a lot of money per hour. But they were all equipped with the same thing, which was large handy wipes, sorbent, I guess, of some sort it's called. And they're wiping down boulders, rocks. That's the state of the art. I mean, that's it. I mean, because if this was China and we could mobilize 1 billion people and give each of them, you know, at one of those big things of sorbent, we still wouldn't get 365 miles done by fall. I mean, we didn't witness the high-pressure washing, but we did go to a beach which had been washed twice. When you dug down in the gravel, we were told that, we saw, Bruce and I did this, that why don't you dig down the gravel and up comes the brown crude, and we were told that goes down 3.5 feet. There's no method known to anyone who we talk to of how to get that out of the beach except through natural processes, and I have no idea how long that might take. I mean, this is the state of the art. I mean, what we witnessed, that cleanup activity, I mean, you've got great resources here. You've taken over a motel or whatever, or you did originally, and now you've got a building, and you've got PR people, and you've got a good slideshow. And, you know, I mean, all these things are going on. I noticed all the supervisors for this company, which has some sort of affiliation with Exxon, standing in a big clump while the workers work, sort of like any kind of public works thing that industry would point their finger at and say, look at all the people leaning on shovels. This is it. I mean, that's what we're going to see for the summer. I mean, there's nothing else. I mean, it's pretty, I tried to wipe one rock. I think it was Congressman Durbin and myself. And
I wouldn't hire him.
Yeah, and we didn't make a lot of progress.
Those are good questions, if you will, Congressman. Let me begin at the top and start with socks. The logistics are that we've ordered 100,000 pairs of wool socks to be had on location. We have had a very rapid buildup of people, and I'm not going to tell you we've done it perfectly. We're doing it the best we know how. We're trying to get in front of each one of those problems. We have had to add capability for washing and of clothes and caring for people on board the Juno, and specifically that's where those people that you saw were working out of at that time. And I don't want to belittle that. You know, that is a problem. We're working very hard on it, and I feel confident that we're gaining on that problem. Let me just comment in general. We have been able to bring people online faster than we have been able to bring equipment online. And you've seen the equipment, which are the sprayers and the washers and the heaters, and we're still bringing that equipment online. We elected to err on the side of going ahead and bringing in the people, even though sometimes the equipment for mechanical washing was not yet available. Then we made the decision, all right, how do we use these people? We said, rather than have them doing nothing, let's wipe rocks. Now, we've recognized that wiping rocks is an extremely low productivity effort and will not get the job done. But it was better than have them doing nothing. So we did have some people wiping rocks until such time as we can get all of the equipment on site that will put everybody into the mechanical mode, which will either be cold water or hot water washing, depending on what the operation is. We do not depend on, nor have we ever depended on, nor do we ever plan to depend on, the wiping of rocks as a highly productive or successful process for cleaning the beaches. But we did think it was prudent to err on the side of bringing the people resources on as quickly as we could. Now, we recognize that's given a bad impression from time to time. Let me comment just for a moment on Smith Island, and your observations on Smith Island are very valid. And I'm assuming that's where you landed from the Juno.
Both Smith and Little Smith.
Okay. That island, in our opinion, in the opinion of the people that are doing the assessment surveys, which includes the agencies involved, is the worst hit of all the islands. It has the broadest beach. It's the worst hit. We're not through cleaning that island, and we recognize it's a very difficult job. We did hit it early for a cleaning process because we wanted to take the loose oil that was laying on top off of the rocks so that we'd minimize potential for re-oiling the areas where the seals will be pupping. And to that extent, in achieving that, we've been successful. We have not finished cleaning that beach, but I think we've been successful in improving the level of protection in the areas where the seals will be pupping. All of that is part of that plan in order to reach our environmental objectives in the program. But it is a difficult area, and I want to assure you we do not plan to depend on anyone wiping rocks as the means of completing this project.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. When I was out here some 3 weeks ago, Mr. Stevens, I left Valdez with a very strong notion that this system had had a major failure. And by the system, I mean essentially from the Arctic Circle, the delivery system that runs from the Arctic Circle to, I guess, Long Beach or in some cases around through the Panama Canal to the East Coast.
And I think one of the things we've learned in this hearing is just like we learned from the space shuttle, that it wasn't just the O-rings that were in trouble. There were whole components of that system that were stressed out, that were stretched beyond their capabilities, had to be redesigned, re-engineered, refabricated in order to ensure the safety of that system. I think that's what we're learning here. Whether it's the maze over here of walking people through and allowed a, what has been alleged to be an impaired master to get through that system, whether it's a question of the assets being the state of the state of art technology that the people have been assured, the response times, whether they're realistic or not, you have to appreciate what it means to sit on this side of the table and find out that Alyeska disavowed the notion that they were going to pick up 100,000 barrels in 48 hours, and we see them committing themselves to a plan with the governor to pick up 100,000 barrels in 10 hours. We've been stung in this process as policymakers. Our constituents are asking us for those questions. At the same time, the industry is asking us to expand this system. Whether it's the North Slope or Alaska, whether it's the Beaufort Sea, get these terms down, it relies on this same system. If we were to do the North Slope, some people say that would double the life of the pipeline. Why would we double the life of the pipeline into the year 2010, 2020, if we still have this system of 1988 in place? And we like to think that we represent the public. I think in this case, you have involuntarily been drafted to represent the industry in this endeavor. And I'm, you know, I appreciate that you've said that the industry is willing to undertake this effort. But this mismatch cannot continue between our ability to discover, our ability to refine and make new products. And it's the old business, the chain is as strong as its weakest link. And we have some marvelous technology across your industry, fabulous. But now we see that what we're saddled with is a weak link that threatens to bring down future exploration and development. I think that's just very clear. And you're in a tough position. This is, as we announced in the beginning, this is a series of hearings that we will be doing on this spill, on your Alyeska system. We have jurisdiction over that, over the right-of-way, and obviously have very substantial jurisdiction over the production for that facility. And I expect that we will be calling upon you again, both with respect to this this particular incident, but also engaging in very, very careful scrutiny about how we redesign, re-engineer this system. I am not comfortable at all with the, I think it was necessary, but the 30-day emergency response, it simply isn't adding another skimmer. There's something else more fundamentally wrong here. And I think that's going to be the challenge. We expect to be involved in that process, and look forward to working with you. This is a tough adversarial process at this point because people feel that they were stung. Our constituents have communicated it to us. You've received your 10 or 12 or 15,000 chopped up credit cards. No impact on your earnings, but you better listen to what they're saying because that's what they're saying to us. And I hope that that this can be worked out. But as I said earlier, I do not know why I would expand this system into the 1990s, given all that you've said about our future energy needs. If I'm saddled with this kind of response to a horrible environmental insult such as this, and I guess that's about it. There's no further comments from my colleagues.
Mr. Chairman, if I might,
let me
say that we are listening. We're listening to the dialogue in this committee today. We're listening to the American people. We're getting a lot of letters, as you can imagine. I've commented that there are some lessons to be learned from this accident. We're taking those on board. We'll participate in industry forums as well as within our own company. It's important
I feel, to recognize that around the turn of the century, oil production from existing sources is going to be down by about 30% from today's levels in this country. And you commented earlier that you're not seeking, you realize that a risk-free environment is not possible. What we're about then, we in Exxon, you in this committee, is trying to look at the balance of risk and benefit. And certainly we should keep in mind the benefit that domestic supply brings to this country. We look forward to participating with you in this committee and other forums in addressing that balance.
I think, let me just say, I appreciate, you know, the notion is somehow we're going to be irresponsible policymakers if we don't appreciate the flow of oil in this country. Around the turn of the century or even before, we're going to start dismantling nuclear power plants. And this country has made, as of to date, a conscious decision that they're not going to build any more. And whether that's wise or not wise, the country is capable of that kind of decision. And that's all that I'm saying. And that decision involved some of the biggest corporations in this country, some of the heaviest lobbying politically in this country, all the things that are present in this conflict. And they lost that conflict to the American public. Now, we all have our opinions about what that means down the road. But I suggest that the potential is present here for that same kind of debate. It may not be a national decision. They may just decide that we're going to put Alaska offshore, off limits, or the ANWR off limits, or the California coast. And you know the ramifications of that in your industry. Because it's very easy. One of the concerns we have shared, Mr. Ventel, myself, and others on the committee, it's very easy to make decisions about Alaska when you're from the lower 48. And I'm just suggesting that I think that the nature of this debate is as great as the debate you had when the public finally said,
by Monday morning, the winds of Sunday night had to move the oil out of the compact cluster in the center of the sound out to down toward the southwest Prince William Sound, some 35 miles. Those points, we have both conflicting statements on the congressional record, both the Coast Guard, DEC, Exxon, and Alyeska, all under oath. Eventually, perhaps through the NTSB hearings or through subsequent congressional hearings, there may be some resolution. But again, it is interesting to note that all these statements were made under oath. The coverage today of this congressional hearing, live from Valdez, was brought to you by KCHE Radio, licensed to Terminal Radio here in Valdez, Alaska. I want to thank stations around the state for participating in this coverage and making these hearings available to their listeners. And for our folks in Valdez and Cordova, our listenership, we do thank you for taking the time to listen in and find out firsthand what is being said and what positions are being taken as all the parties involved in this oil spill seem to move closer and closer toward litigation to resolve some of the outstanding issues. For the time being, that is the conclusion of these hearings. We'll be returning to our studios in just a moment. Again, I want to thank the folks at the station, James Winchester this morning, Mary Beth Joyce, and Laurie Whitehouse back at KCHU for their engineering. I'm Dave Hammack. I've been up here at the Valdez Civic Center. And now for KCHU Radio, I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network. At this time, there are no other conferences or hearings scheduled in Valdez that we know of. We will keep our listeners and the listeners statewide appraised of other developments. This committee has held 2 days of hearings here. They'll be rapidly packing up to take off. They were supposed to have left today at about 1 o'clock. It's now an hour later. Committees yesterday, on their first day, heard from Alyeska, Cordova Fishermen, and the state, as well as the mayor of Valdez. Again, a number of contradictions. Some of the key contradictions being both DEC and the Coast Guard denying that they had restricted or prohibited the use of dispersants. Exxon saying that those agencies were responsible for holding up the use of dispersants until so late on Sunday, the day three of the spill incident, that they were unable to use a massive drop of dispersants early on, and by Monday morning, the winds of Sunday night had moved the oil out of the compact cluster in the center of the sound out to down toward the southwest Prince William Sound, some 35 miles. Those points, we have both conflicting statements on the congressional record, both Coast Guard, DEC, Exxon, and Alyeska, all under oath. Eventually, perhaps through the NTSB hearings or through subsequent congressional hearings, there may be some resolution, but again, it is interesting to note that all these statements were made under oath. The coverage today of this congressional hearing, live from Valdez, was brought to you by KCHE Radio, licensed to Terminal Radio here in Valdez, Alaska. I want to thank stations around the state for participating in this coverage and making these hearings available to their listeners. And for our folks in Valdez and Cordova, our listenership, we do thank you for taking the time to listen in and find out firsthand what is being said and what positions are being taken as all the parties involved in this oil spill seem to move closer and closer toward litigation to resolve some of the outstanding issues. For the time being, that is the conclusion of these hearings. We'll be returning to our studios in just a moment. Again, I want to thank the folks at the station, James Winchester this morning, Mary Beth Joyce, and Laurie Whitehouse back at KCHU for their engineering. I'm Dave Hammack. I've been up here at the Valdez Civic Center. And now for KCHU Radio, I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
That was a statement by Bruce Vento, Democrat from Minnesota, followed by the adjournment of this congressional subcommittee hearing by George Miller, who is the chairman of the House Interior Subcommittee on Water, Power, and Offshore Energy Resources. This morning we heard from two Coast Guard officers, Captain or Commander Steve McCall, Port Captain for the Port of Valdez, and also Vice Admiral Clyde Robbins, who is heading the Coast Guard effort on behalf of Admiral Yost, the Commandant of the Coast Guard. And then the panel we just heard of executives from Exxon Corporation, Bill Stevens, or W.D. Stevens, who's the president of Exxon USA, Frank Iarossi, president of Exxon Shipping Company, and Otto Harrison, who is the Valdez operations general manager, who is officially attached to Exxon Shipping Company, who is heading the Valdez, coordinating the Valdez spill response effort. The hearings full of contradictions, also very difficult to sometimes keep track of who was speaking. There were five congressmen here today. The chairman, George Miller, from California, Wayne Owens, who is a Democrat from Utah, and Peter DeFazio, Democrat from Oregon, and Bruce Vento of Minnesota, were joined by Richard Durbin of Illinois, who is not a member of this particular subcommittee, but again is on the Appropriations Subcommittee, in fact I think chairs it, the Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation, which includes the Coast Guard's budget. At this time, there are no other conferences or hearings scheduled in Valdez that we know of. We will keep our listeners and the listeners statewide appraised of other developments. This committee has held 2 days of hearings here. They'll be rapidly packing up to take off. They were supposed to have left today at about 1 o'clock. It's now an hour later. Committees yesterday, on their first day, heard from Alyeska, Cordova fishermen, and the state, as well as the mayor of Valdez. Again, a number of contradictions. Some of the key contradictions being both DEC and the Coast Guard denying that they had restricted or prohibited the use of dispersants. Exxon saying that those agencies were responsible for holding up the use of dispersants until so late on Sunday, the day three of the spill incident, that they were unable to use a massive drop of dispersants early on, and by Monday morning, the winds of Sunday night had moved the oil out of the compact cluster in the center of the sound out to down toward the southwest Prince William Sound, some 35 miles. Those points, we have both conflicting statements on the congressional record, both the Coast Guard, DEC, Exxon, and Alyeska, all under oath. Eventually, perhaps through the NTSB hearings or through subsequent congressional hearings, there may be some resolution, but again, it is interesting to note that all these statements were made under oath. The coverage today of this congressional hearing, live from Valdez, was brought to you by KCHU Radio, licensed to terminal radio here in Valdez, Alaska. I want to thank stations around the state for participating in this coverage and making these hearings available to their listeners. And for our folks in Valdez and Cordova, our listenership, we do thank you for taking the time to listen in and find out firsthand what is being said and what positions are being taken as all the parties involved in this oil spill seem to move closer and closer toward litigation to resolve some of the outstanding issues. For the time being, that is the conclusion of these hearings. We'll be returning to our studios in just a moment. Again, I want to thank the folks at the station, James Winchester this morning, Mary Beth Joyce, and Laurie Whitehouse back at KCHU for their engineering. I'm Dave Hammack. I've been up here at the Valdez Civic Center. And now for KCHU Radio, I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.